Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Samuel chapter 17, the second half of the chapter, verses 31 through 58. This is the story of David and Goliath, part 2. Part 1 was the first half of chapter 17, verses 1 through 30, which is our context, which we covered in the last audio. Part 1 was the first half of chapter 17 was just the setup where David shows up, bringing food for his brothers in the army, Goliath taunting the Israelite soldiers there in the Valley of Elah, right west of Bethlehem, at a place called Soko, or Socah, S-O-C-A-H. And David brings food to his kids, to his brothers, Jesse's kids, the three older brothers. So we start down 1 Samuel 17, verses 31 through 33. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he, Saul, sent for him, David. Saul sent for David. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him, on account of Goliath. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Then Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." Before we get started on this, let me once again point out, as I did in the last audio, that there are textual problems here. As John Gill says, the whole of 1 Samuel 17, verses 11 through 31, which is mostly what we did in the last audio, that section is wanting in the Septuagint version, and so 20 verses or so are thought by some to be an interpolation. Gill says it must be owned that there are difficulties in them. We're going to look at some of these difficulties later. I don't think it's anything that can't be overcome, in my humble opinion. So we'll look at that when we get there. Now, verse 31 says that David spoke some words which were heard. What words? Well, that would be back in 1 Samuel 17, 26. David spoke to the men who were standing with him. What will be done for the man who kills that Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? That Philistine being Goliath, the giant. David continues, "Just who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So David's speaking very boldly for a young man who's never fought in a battle before, speaking words to troops, seasoned troops. And because he was so confident, I'm sure that's why that people went to tell Saul about this man David. Saul, of course, looks at this young man and says, "Hey, you're but a youth. You're not a warrior. Goliath has been a warrior from his youth. You're just a young kid. What do you think you can do?" Now, how old was David at this juncture? John Gill says some say about 14 or 16 years of age, but very probably about 20 and not more. In my previous audio, I estimated in his early 20s. Adam Clark says that David was supposed to be about 22 or 23 years of age. So let's just take it at that. He's in his early 20s. We go down to 1 Samuel 17, verses 34 through 37. But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." So David is responding to Saul's diss of him and saying, "Look, you don't think I can kill Philistines? I kill lions. I kill bears." Now, David mentions when a lion and a bear came and took a lamb from him. That had to be at different times because lions and bears don't travel together. So David wasn't able to handle both a lion and a bear at the same time, but nonetheless, handling a lion by himself and handling a bear by himself is quite an accomplishment. David says, "Saul, hey, I seized him by his beard." Now, that's probably referring to the lion, not the bear. Bears don't have beards. Although Adam Clark says David caught the bear by the beard because Adam Clark has got such a wealth of knowledge of all kind of weird things, having traveled all over the place and written everything down. No, it's a lion's got the beard. Struck him and killed him. How did he strike the lion? David could have used his fist. He could have used his shepherd's staff. He could have used a stone. Doesn't really matter. He killed the lion. And David says that lion's going to be like that uncircumcised Philistine. Or that bear is going to be like the uncircumcised Philistine. Now what he means is he's going to be like him in the sense that he's going to be dead. John Gill suggests that the lion and the bear like the Philistines because the Philistines are savage, cruel, and unclean like a lion and a bear. But I think David was talking about he's going to make them dead like the lion and the bear. Now in verse 36, David says the Philistines are going to be like the lion and the bear because or since the Philistine, Goliath, has taunted the armies of the living God. Now that phrase, armies of the living God, David likes. He actually repeated, he called the Saul's army, the armies of the living God in verse 16. David knows who he's fighting for. He's not really fighting for Saul, who's a creep. He's fighting for God, even though Saul is in charge of these armies. Now notice in verse 37, David said, "The Lord, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. He delivered me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear. He will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." He's giving God full credit here. He's not bragging about how strong he is, that he can beat bears and lions. Well, his confident speech apparently impressed Saul enough because Saul said in the last part of verse 37, Saul said to David, "Go and may the Lord be with you." In other words, go fight the guy. I guess Saul's thinking, well, what has he got to lose? He might lose one young soldier or one young boy, but on the other hand, maybe he'll win and get him out of his predicament because Saul is too cowardly to attack David, to attack Goliath by himself or to attack the Philistine army. It says in a previous verse in this chapter that Saul and the armies were very afraid. Now notice in verse 37 how confident David is. He says, "He, Yahweh, will deliver me." Not when, not if he will deliver me, but he will, period. Imperative, or excuse me, indicative. He's going to do it. David speaks with perfect confidence and faith, and his words were no idle boast because he backed up his words with his later actions. As you know the story, he's going to kill Goliath. We go now to 1 Samuel 17, verses 38 through 40. "Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them." Not tested his armor, not tested his sword and his equipment. "So David said to Saul, 'I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them.' And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine." Now what armor did Saul offer David? Doesn't say Saul's armor, it just says Saul clothed David with armor. Doesn't say whose armor it is. Well, it could have been Saul's own armor, but that's unlikely. Saul, you recall, was a very tall guy. David's a young man. They're probably not the same size. This is probably another suit of armor that Saul had. And besides, why would Saul strip his own army off as the army was preparing for battle? As I said in the last audio, they had to prepare for battle every day just in case the Philistines attacked. They were in defensive array behind the circular rampart of wagons and the baggage trains there, and Saul's not going to take his armor off. He's going to keep it on, so he had another suit somewhere. Must be a backup, and most probably Saul's armor was too big for David, so that's probably it was another suit. But then we have a problem with that. Why did David have trouble walking in a suit of armor that actually fit him? Well, the answer to that is David had never worn armor before. It might have fit him, but he'd never used it before, and armor's heavy, and it restricts your movement. The army is very heavy and it's clumsy. So David said, to heck with that. He's not tested them. He's not tried them on before. He's not experienced with it. But he is experienced with slingshots. So he gets 5 smooth stones from the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag. Now, smooth stones, that's because water washes over stones in a brook, making them very smooth, as I'm sure you've seen in mountain streams. Why does he want smooth stones? Because smooth stones are released more easily from a sling. They fly through the air more easily than if they're rough, kind of like a slick baseball as opposed to a scuffed-up baseball. Scuffed-up baseball is going to do dips and breaks left and right, but if it's smooth, it's harder to make it break. So he gets his smooth rocks, puts them in a shepherd's bag. That's probably a bag that shepherds use to carry the food out to the flocks, and he gets ready to go fight Goliath by approaching him, by walking toward him. Now, because of the sling, David had several advantages, and Goliath apparently wasn't aware of these advantages. Goliath's a pretty cocky guy. Well, here's the advantages that David had. He could hit Goliath at any distance from a long way off. Goliath could only win close up, so Goliath had to get close to David in order to beat him, and he had to avoid the rock coming at him. Now, there's one exception to this. If Goliath had a javelin, and that's disputed is because of translation issues. He might could have tossed the javelin from afar. He would have one shot. David had five shots. He had four backup rocks. If he missed, he could simply reload and try again till he ran out of stones, and he had four stones in reserve. And if that didn't work, he could always run because he's unencumbered by armor. It might have looked bad for the armies of God. I'm sure it would have, but he could have saved his life. So David had a lot of advantages with this sling, just because Goliath had a lot of heavy armor and a lot of heavy weapons. David was a smart guy. Now, this battle is often termed described in terms of little tiny David and big old Goliath. You know, this is a David and Goliath situation. Goliath is really favored to win the battle because he's a big warrior and David's nothing but a shepherd. Well, that's true, but David, militarily here, he was not doing too badly. He kind of cuts from the stereotype of the underdog winning. But nonetheless, we need to point that out. We go now to 1 Samuel 17, verses 41 through 44. Then the Philistine came on and approached David. That's his Goliath, the Philistine, with the shield bearer in front of him. If you recall in our last chapter, last audio in the first part of this chapter, Goliath had a shield bearer with him. He was not alone. The shield bearer would try to ward off attacks on his principal. He wasn't able to ward off this stone that came flying. I'm sure it came flying very fast, and the shield bearer was not able to stop it. Verse 42, when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy, with a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Now, why did Goliath disdain David? He might have at first thought the Israelites were trying to mock him by sending an unarmed teenager to fight him. He might not have seen the bag with the rocks and the sling. I'm sure he's pretty shocked and trying to figure out what's going on here. And it says, the text says, David was but a youth and ruddy. Now, ruddy usually means red, but some people speculated it means he probably looked pale and effeminate opposed to the swarthy Goliath who's out there in the sun as a soldier, whereas, I don't know, it's hard to know what that word ruddy means. But at any rate, David did not look like a weather-beaten, battle-hardened veteran soldier. He was handsome. Soldiers aren't handsome. They're tough-looking. Verse 43, the Philistine said to David, now this was usual for champions meeting in combat to give speeches to each other, mocking, hurling epithets, and so forth. And he said, the first thing he said was, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? In other words, usually when you attack a dog, you have to take a stick to knock the dog away from you. And so Goliath is saying, is that what you think of me, David? Am I just a dog instead of a battle-hardened Philistine warrior? And then the Philistine cursed David by his gods. His main god was Dagon, the fish god. You recall Dagon when the Philistines stole the ark from the Israelites in the Battle of Aphek, the Battle of Shiloh. They put the ark in the temple there, and Dagon fell down before the ark, and then the next time they put him back up, and then Dagon, the fish god, who's half fish and half man, he falls down again, and his head hits the threshold, and his head got chopped off. That's Dagon, the fish god. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. He'd probably be saying, you son of a whore, David! By Dagon, you bastard, I'm going to kill you, and that kind of stuff, you know. Contrast that later when we see how David speaks. And again, Goliath has probably not seen that slingshot yet, because he says in verse 44, he said to David, come to me, which means David is still out of sword range. And he probably told David, hey, come to me, I don't want to walk over there with all this heavy armor to fight you. Come on out here and let me take care of you. We go down to 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 through 47. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So David's very confident here. He was confident before Saul. Now he's confident before Goliath. He says, I'm going to kill you, and I'm also going to make your Philistine army flee. I'd go, killed, be killed. I would give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the earth. Now, that's really cocky. Well, of course, David knew that once the champion fled, the army's going to flee too, which is exactly what happened. Now, let's look at Saul's weapons. David says to Saul, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. That's the NASB translation. The ESV, the Bible in Basic English, they say the same thing, sword, spear, and javelin. However, the Holman Christian Bible, Study Bible, has a dagger, spear, and sword. The King James has a sword, spear, and shield. The New American Bible has a sword, spear, and scimitar, which is a curved Asian knife, the sharp edge on the convex side. Young's Literal Translation has a sword, spear, or buckler, which is a kind of a shield. So in other words, the translations are not in unison. It's hard to translate the weapons that Goliath has. But looking at what's common in all of them, spears in all of the translations, so he could have tossed a spear at David. David would have had to have gotten out of the way. Dagger and a sword, if the other two weapons were a dagger or a sword of some sort, he would have to get close to David. And of course, if one of the weapons was a buckler, that's a defensive weapon. But at any rate, what David is saying to Goliath, you come to me with military weapons, I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. I mean, the name means in the person of the Lord of hosts. That's what name means. It stands for the person. The Lord of hosts, that's the Yahweh who is in charge of his armies. And of course, he then says, puts in apposition to the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel. The Lord of hosts is the God of the armies of Israel. The host there is not the angels, as oftentimes you hear the phrase Lord of hosts means the Lord of all the angels. This is the Lord of the armies of Israel. So he's given a high and mighty name to the armies, those cowardly armies of Saul who are hiding behind the baggage train. He's walking in faith. He's not walking in sight. And he says, and by the way, Goliath, you've taunted the Lord of hosts. How had Goliath taunted? Well, actually, he's taunted the armies of Israel, indirectly the Lord of hosts, but directly Goliath has taunted the armies of Israel. How so? 1 Samuel 17:10, the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel today. Send me a man so we can fight each other. Now, he did that 40 days, as we see in the last first part of chapter 17. 40 days he's taunting the armies of Israel. Here in verse 45, David calls Saul's army God of the armies of Israel. His previous description, I think it was verse 16, he called them the armies of the living God. So now it's God of the armies. Before it was armies of God. But he intimately connects that army with Yahweh. In verse 46, David says, I will strike you down, take your head off. David must have had divine assurance spiritually revealed to him in order to make such a confident statement. And Goliath, on his part, he must have thought David was almost crazy to be boasting like this. Here this guy, this little kid's walking up with no weapons, and he's talking about taking my head off. I mentioned earlier that when David boasted to Goliath that the army of the Philistines would be delivered up to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, and that their army would consist of dead bodies, David knew the Philistine army would panic and run upon Goliath's defeat and thus get cut to pieces by the Israelite army, and that actually happened. We see that in a few verses later in 1 Samuel 17:52. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley into the gates of Ekron. We'll read that in just a minute. Adam Clark says that David had made a, quote, direct and circumstantial prophecy of what did take place. Notice in verse 46, David says, you and the dead armies of the Philistines will be delivered to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth. Well, he didn't say that to Goliath. He said it about the dead armies of the Philistines, the dead bodies in the army of the Philistines. Notice he's turned Goliath's taunt around because Goliath said, David, I'm going to deliver your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. That's in verse 44. And David says, nah, I'm going to take the dead bodies of your army, Goliath, and I'm going to deliver them to the beasts of the field and the birds of the sky. So Goliath taunts. David answers. David's in full charge of this situation. Now David says he's going to deliver the army of the Philistines to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. Now that earth there is Eretz, the Hebrew, and Eretz, as Brown Driver Briggs lexicon, Hebrew lexicon, says that Eretz could be translated as land. So David is saying, I'm going to deliver all the dead bodies to the beast that all the land may know that there's a God in Israel. I don't know. I think it's earth here. John Gill agrees with me. He said the report would spread to the whole planet, especially now. I mean, we're talking about it now, and we're not anywhere near the Valley of Elah in western Judea. We go now to 1 Samuel 17, verses 48 and 49. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Now why did David run quickly toward the battle line? He wanted to get the first shot in. He wanted to sling his rock before Goliath could get himself in position to use his weapons, whatever his weapons were, particularly his spear or javelin, the long-range weapon. He hits Goliath on the head with a rock, knocks him to the ground. Now, some people have asked, how could a rock knock Goliath to the ground, striking Goliath on the forehead, since Goliath had on a bronze helmet? Well, that's easy to answer. In fact, I've got five different options to answer that. Option number one. Goliath's helmet fell back when he looked at the sky. When David mentioned the birds of the sky, Goliath looked up at the sky. Well, that's not going to do it. That's a weak option. Option number two, Goliath pushed his helmet back so he could hear David's conversation. When he perceived David to be unarmed, Goliath didn't push it back down. There's no need. Why do I need to put a helmet on? This guy doesn't have any weapons. That's reasonable. It could be he had a face covering with his helmet and the rock went through the eye hole into Goliath's brain, which that would be miraculous or providential, because you can't aim for an eye hole with a sling. Option number four, the helmet actually was shut. The face part of it was shut, and the rock hit the bronze and still killed Goliath anyway. Gill and Clark talk about Diodorus Siculus, the ancient historian, who tells of shields and helmets and armor being smashed by slings. I wouldn't doubt that. The Septuagint actually has it this way, as Adam Clark says, and the rock hit the bronze, not his forehead, but the bronze. Adam Clark says ancient helmets didn't have any covering for the face, and that's why the rock hit Goliath in the forehead. So you see there's a lot of disagreement on exactly how this happened. I know a lot of these movies I watch, and of course movies are supposed to make the costumes match the period, but you see a lot of helmets with no face guards. Lots of them. Now, that wasn't true in the European Middle Ages, but in the ancient Roman times, there certainly were helmets that had no face guards. At any rate, Goliath is Kaputsky. We go now to 1 Samuel 17, 50-51. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now, when David pulled out the Philistine sword, that was a big sword because Goliath was a big giant. But David manipulated it with ease and killed the Philistine as he lay on the ground. How did he do that? Well, maybe it's because David was naturally very strong, even though he was young. After all, he killed a lion and a bear, and if he can kill a lion and a bear, he can wield a giant sword. Maybe his adrenaline was flowing after the battle that gave him some extra strength. Maybe God supernaturally gave him extra strength. I don't think so. I think he was able to kill him naturally. Why did he need to do that? Because the stone, apparently, had not killed Goliath. It just stunned him and knocked him to the ground, and he was either unconscious or extremely woozy. Now, in verse 51, David cut off Goliath's head. Why? Well, John Gill says this was to show to the Philistine army that their champion was dead. Jameson Fawcett and Brown disagrees and said, what's the point of doing that? The slaughter had already been done in the presence of the whole army. There was no need to show a head to the Philistine army for proof that their champion was dead. Well, I think the Gill has got the better of the argument there, because there would be a need to show that the Philistines that Goliath was dead, because even though Goliath was on the ground and might have looked dead, actually he wasn't. And maybe some of the Philistine army would look at that and think, is he really dead or not? Maybe he's still alive. But there's no doubt when David held up the head, yep, Goliath's dead. You can't live with nobody with your head and your body separated. So I think it was necessary to show the Philistine army that Goliath was dead. And also, cutting off heads in ancient Eastern warfare was done to show victory, as a token of victory. How many times have you seen the movies, especially the Roman Empire, when the general comes in, holds up the head of the wannabe emperor, and says, here's his head. How about in the Western Middle Ages, all the warfare that was carried on there, and people would carry heads to show that their ally was dead or that their son was dead or something horrible. It's pretty gruesome, but that's what they did back then. And David probably went through the cities of Judah there near Philistia to say, look here, we beat the Philistines. This was a trophy. And eventually he's going to carry that trophy to Saul. Now the Philistine army, when they saw the severed head of Goliath, they fled. They were panic-stricken. It was hard for them to believe their great champion was dead. Now note that they did not voluntarily submit to the deal that Goliath had made with David. That deal said this: the loser's army would voluntarily submit to the winner's army. This was part of Goliath's taunt in 1 Samuel 17:9. Goliath says to the opposing Israelites, if he, an Israelite champion, is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us. Well, the Philistine army was having none of that. They didn't voluntarily submit to the Israelite army. Now, note that David never made the deal. That was the Philistines' deal. Well, whether David made, at least it's never said that David made the deal. Maybe he did. But whether he did or didn't, it doesn't matter. The Philistines weren't honorable people. They weren't going to honor that quote-unquote deal. And they took off and ran. We go down to 1 Samuel 17, verses 52 through 54. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shaarim, even to Gath and Ekron. The sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Then David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his weapons in his tent. Now, a little bit of geography work here. We've already said in our last audio, I'll say it again here. The battle took place at Socah, which is right at the eastern end. Well, it's actually up in the hills. But if you go a little bit northwest, just a tad, 2 or 3 miles, you hit the opening of the Valley of Elah. And that's where a place called Azekah is. And my BibleAtlas.org map has Shaarim right there, right on top of Azekah almost, with a question mark, because nobody knows exactly where it is. But now if you go up the Valley of Elah going west, due west, about 5 miles, you hit Gath, the famous Philistine city, one of the five famous Philistine cities. And that's where Goliath was from. And then if you go north of Gath, another 5 miles straight north on the road running north, you hit Ekron, which is another of the famous Philistine cities. So we're right here in Philistine territory where it butts up against the territory of the Benjamites. Notice in verse 52, the men of Israel and Judah, in our last audio we mentioned that Judah had contributed some troops to this enterprise. It wasn't just the Benjamites. In fact, it was from all over the place, all over Israel, not just Judah. Judah's mentioned here, again, probably to show that they were all one for all and one for all with Israel, because they're the ones that should have had the king, but instead the lowly tribe of Benjamin got King Saul, even though the kingship had been promised to Judah in the old prophecies 400 or so years earlier when Jacob was dying on his deathbed. In Genesis 49:10, he said, the staff shall belong to Judah, or the scepter shall belong to Judah. The staff shall not depart between from his feet. Those are symbols of rule, rod and scepter. And so they should have had the kingship, but they didn't. But nonetheless, they contributed to the battle. So the Philistines are lying dead in the running all the way in this general area here. If you look at the map, it's about a 10-mile radius going northwest and west of Socah, where David killed Goliath. So there was a lot of chasing going on, a lot of killing of the Philistine army going on. Verse 53, the sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistine and plundered their camps. Notice that the Israelite army showed military discipline. They pursued first, they plundered second. I cannot tell you how many ancient battles could have been won, but the pursuing troops, who probably had not been paid in a year because they were always in arrears, the generals and the salary, they saw that plunder, and so they take the plunder, and meanwhile the opposing army escapes. Happens all the time, but not here. The Israelites plundered the camps after they had chased the Philistines and annihilated the Philistine army. Again, these camps were at Socah, where the battle lines had been drawn up for that 40-day confrontation between Goliath and the armies of Saul. Now in verse 54, David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. This was after he had carried the head in a triumphal procession through various cities in Israel. The text doesn't say that, but Gill speculates that. That's probably reasonable. Why would David then carry Goliath's head to Jerusalem? Jerusalem wasn't a royal city. Jerusalem was not even entirely conquered by the Israelites yet. The Jebusites still possessed part of it. Well, the general run of commentators seems to believe that David was trying to terrorize the Jebusites. He's saying, looky here, we just beat the mighty Philistines, and we're coming after you next. Took David a few years. He has to get the kingship, running around in the desert from Saul for a while. Then he rules down at Hebron for a while. But he eventually got the Jebusites out of Jerusalem, and this might have been a softening up operation. David is said to put his weapons in his tent. That could be at Socah where the battle took place, but David really never had a tent there. He just showed up, left his provisions with the baggage train, and went straight to Saul, got his slingshot ready, and went after Goliath. And besides, that camp had broken up after the victory over the Philistines. So then David could have been gone back to his tent at Bethlehem, and I think that's the proper answer. Jameson Fawcett Brown actually speculates that David put his weapons in the sacred tabernacle, which Jameson Fawcett Brown says is at Nob now, right north of the Mount of Olives near Jerusalem. I don't know how Jameson Fawcett Brown knows that. I haven't seen where the tabernacle is left Shiloh yet. The ark now we know is at Kiriath Yearim. But putting weapons in a tabernacle, I think that was a common practice in the ancient Near East too. So, I mean, that's not totally off the wall, but I wouldn't bet my life on it. We go now to 1 Samuel 17, verses 55 through 58. Now when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army. Abner, of course, is Saul's first cousin. Abner, whose son is this young man? And Abner said, by your life, O king, I do not know. I like that, by your life. That's a good oath. The normal oath was, as the Lord lives. Well, of course he lives. Well, by your life, O king. Well, of course you live, Saul. I do not know. The king said, you inquire whose son the youth is. Go out and find out. Verse 57, so when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. Now here we have an interesting question. It's going to take up a little bit of time here. Saul says, whose son is this young man? Now there's a problem here. Why did not Saul know who David was? There's a couple of reasons. First of all, on one assumed chronology, David had been Saul's court musician and armor bearer before the battle with Goliath. Now that's controverted, of course. That would be if chapter 16 is chronologically before chapter 17. And so then Saul should have known who David was because David had been playing a harp for Saul to keep the demons down. That's one reason why it seems that Saul would already know who David was. Another reason is that Saul had just offered David his armor to go fight Goliath, and so he should have known who David was. Well, let's look at some scholarly options here. I'm going to break them down into two types. The first options will assume that 1 Samuel 16 and 17 are not in chronological order. In other words, the killing of Goliath happened before David was made Saul's armor bearer. So that would mean the passage in 1 Samuel 16, the chapter before us, is written in anticipation of when it happened. In other words, the text order is not the same as the chronology. Now, many commentators take this route, as John Gill says. So we'll assume that right now and see what the problems are. Well, first of all, if this meeting of David is the first time that Saul ever saw him, well, it makes perfectly good sense for him to say who this young man is. But the problem with that is, if we look at 1 Samuel 17, verse 15, we see this. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. Now, that sounds like David has already been working for Saul as a harp player. And so then this event with Goliath happened after that. Well, you could counter that by saying, well, maybe David's doing something else besides bearing armor. Maybe he's going up there and working in Saul's court, big court. Saul doesn't know who all the underlings are in his court. But that's kind of pushing it a little bit. So there's a lot of people who think that the text order is also the chronological order. In other words, Goliath happened after David was made the armor bearer. He was made Saul's armor bearer in chapter 16. In chapter 17, he beats Goliath. And I prefer that just because it's just simpler to think that the text is in chronological order. But if you assume the text is chronological order, then you've got some explaining to do. Why is it that Saul didn't recognize David? If Saul's already been working in his court playing him harp music, how come he doesn't recognize him now at Socah at the battlefield? Well, I'm going to give you four possible ways to explain that. First of all, Saul's mental disorder prohibited him from recognizing David. Remember, Saul was going nuts. He's got mental illness. Also, there was a lot of people at court. And David was appearing in such a different role at court. He was a musician and a shepherd. But here at Socah, he's a valiant soldier who's beat Goliath. So that would make sense. Here's another reason why we don't have to worry about Saul not recognizing David. Because Saul never actually confessed he didn't know David. If you will recall the verse, Saul is asking Abner to find out whose son is this young man. And in verse 58, Saul says to David, "Whose son are you, young man?" He's not saying who you are, he's saying who your son is. But the problem with that is that at the time that David was chosen as armor bearer, Saul had actually communicated with Jesse. 1 Samuel 16:21-22, "When David came to Saul and entered his service, Saul admired him greatly, and David became his armor bearer. Then Saul sent word to Jesse, 'Let David remain in my service, for I am pleased with him.'" So Saul knows who Jesse is at the time the armor bearer. Adam Clark says concerning this that Saul should not know David, with whom he had treated a little before, and even armed him for the combat, that he should not know who his father was, though he had sent to his father for permission for David to reside constantly with him, citing our verse, 1 Samuel 16:22. This is exceedingly strange. Well, yes, it is. And so this argument might not be enough to note to prove that the armor bearer situation is before the Goliath situation. However, it could be that even though Saul had sent word to Jesse to ask Jesse to be for his son David to be Saul's armor bearer, it could be a good deal of time had passed since then. And remember, Saul is mentally disordered. Maybe he just heard Jesse's name, never personally corresponded with him, just sent him a note. So that would be a reasonable explanation as to why Saul doesn't seem to know David, is because he's not really saying he doesn't know David. He's asking, he doesn't know David's father, not David himself. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's got option number three as to why Saul didn't recognize David, even though David had previously been his armor bearer in chapter 16. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that David had grown a beard since he became the armor bearer, and he was wearing a beard by the time he beat Goliath. I don't think so. His face was ruddy. His face was handsome. I don't think so. I think that's off the wall. Fourth option as to why Saul did not recognize David. Ellicott says this: some length of time had passed, so David passed from Saul's memory. He just forgot who he was. Well, when you take that, it could be a length of time. It could be Saul's mental illness. It could be Saul just forgot. I don't think that any assertion that the mention of the Goliath incident has happened before the armor bearer incident, I don't think any such argument is dispositive. I like to keep chapter 16 and 17 in time order. So Saul was the armor bearer. David was the armor bearer of Saul first, the player of the harp first in chapter 16, and then he goes out and beats Goliath in chapter 17, in my humble opinion. Now Abner, the leader of the army, he also didn't know who David was. Well, that's not surprising. He's a general. He's involved in fighting away from Jerusalem, assuming that David is up there in Saul's court playing the harp and being an armor bearer. Just because Abner doesn't know who he was is not surprising. He wasn't there. He's out there fighting the Philistines away from Jerusalem. And besides, David was just a domestic servant in Saul's court. Why would the big army general know all the domestic servants of Saul? Not only that, David was not always at court, assuming he was made armor bearer before he beat Goliath. So he was always going back and forth to tend his father's sheep. Abner very well could have missed him. And another reason that Abner might not know who David was, because David's father Jesse was an old man living in obscurity in Bethlehem. So David was not famous. Now, Abner was tasked with going out and finding out who David's father was. Instead, he brings David to Saul personally. Why? Well, it's better than asking around. Abner brought David himself to answer the question of who his parents were. So that's reasonable. And also, he may have brought David to Saul so that Saul could reward David for killing Goliath. This all probably happened at Gibeah, which is about three miles north of Jerusalem, Saul's birthplace, where the court was. It was not in Jerusalem. Now, in verse 55, Saul says, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" He asks Abner. And then in verse 58, Saul asks David, "Whose son are you, young man?" Why is Saul so all-fired hot to find out who David's father was? Well, the answer is in verse 25, 1 Samuel 17. "Previously, an Israelite man had declared, 'Do you see this man who keeps coming out? He comes to defy Israel.'" It's talking about Goliath. And this Israelite tells David, "The king will make the man who kills him very rich and will give him his daughter." Might not have told David they were just talking and revealing the offer that Saul had made. "The king will make the man who kills him," kills Goliath, "very rich and will give him his daughter. The king will also make the household of that man's father exempt from paying taxes in Israel." And that's why Saul wanted to know who David's father was, so he could exempt Jesse from taxes. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with the story of David and Goliath in 1 Samuel 17, verses 31 through 58. That prepares us to go to the next chapter, chapter 18. We will look at David and his relationships with Saul, with Jonathan, Saul's son, and with Michal, Saul's daughter. I hope you stay tuned for all these psychological relationship issues in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this audio. Let me say that it's interesting that David, he played the harp, he wrote poetry, he seems like sort of a nerd or an artistic guy, artsy-fartsy type of guy, but then he's going out and killing bears and lions with his bare hands and killing a giant in Mortal Kombat, mano a mano. He's kind of an interesting guy, a special guy. So at any rate, we'll see you in the next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.